Good evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Have you heard of Lyme disease, also known as Lyme borreliosis? Lyme disease is an infectious disease spread by ticks. Symptoms include a rash, flu-like symptoms, joint pain, and weakness in the limbs. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that about 300,000 Americans are infected with Lyme disease each year, and that's between reported and unreported cases. Experts say the incidence of Lyme disease in Africa remains unknown. However, Lyme disease does affect some population in sub-Saharan Africa and can be fatal. On the program today, we will take a look at tick-borne illnesses, in particular Lyme disease. And joining us via phone from New York City is our guest, Dr. Christine Horner. She's a natural health expert and award-winning author. Dr. Horner, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm actually from San Diego, California.
Oh, how about that? I don't know why I put you in New York City. So this is thank you for joining us from San Diego, California. How is the weather there?
Perfect.
Perfect, of course. That's California.
That's right.
Well, listen, I mentioned the weather. One of the issues that comes with warm weather, I believe, is Lyme disease. So what is Lyme disease?
Yeah, so Lyme disease, most people have heard of it because it really causes, you know, fairly horrendous symptoms. And the statistics are now that it is the most common, what we call vector-borne illness, meaning that it's coming from a tick or mosquito or some other, you know, insect that bites us and then injects a pathogen into us. In the case of Lyme disease, they've actually found that there's just one type of tick that will carry it. It's called a black-legged tick or a deer tick. The reason it has the deer tick name is that actually the animals that carry Lyme disease are deer and some other rodents, and so the ticks will attach onto those animals where they then develop getting that bacteria, which is got the scientific name of it, is called Borrelia burgdorferi. So the scientist who discovered this particular bacteria that was responsible for Lyme disease was actually in the 1980s, so not that long ago, and his name was Burgdorfer. So that's why they named it after him, burgdorferi. So anyway, what happens is this tick, and usually when it's in its very young kind of developing early phase called a nymph phase, it will have the Lyme disease in it, and it's when kind of the most we're more susceptible to getting the Lyme disease from them. So they're teeny tiny then. They're about the size of a poppy seed, so pretty hard to see. And what they do is they attach on to you, your skin, and basically they're biting you, and then they will inject this bacteria into your body. And the very early signs of it, it's flu-like symptoms. So lots of times, unless you have a high index of suspicion, you may think you just had the flu because it's very nonspecific, kind of, you know, aches and pains and fevers and that kind of thing. And then that generally will go away, and then it can come back with a vengeance in a very different way. So what they found was that in that early phase, it's due to the infection. And if you have this high index of suspicion, you would want to go on antibiotics right away for several weeks, so kind of in the first month that you would get exposed to the Lyme disease, then you can take antibiotics and it can be very successful. Okay. Now, after you get out of that phase, with that early phase, there's actually a completely different kind of situation that occurs with chronic Lyme disease. And with that disease, they found that it actually doesn't have to do with the bacteria necessarily. Treating with antibiotics actually causes more harm than good. And what happens is there's kind of a weird situation with your immune system that then causes this massive kind of multi-system inflammatory disease.
Wow.
And it can show up. They call it the great mimicker because it can show up as about 300 different diseases, which is why it's so difficult to diagnose. But, you know, you might think you have arthritis, or you can get inflammation even of your heart that would cause heart palpitations. You can get inflammation of your brain that can actually cause psychiatric problems and memory loss.
That's a lot right there. And it's a lot of information also that you're giving us at once. And it's really, for something that is, I know there are many people who know about it, but some people still don't comprehend it. How do you make the difference in terms of someone dealing with Lyme disease as opposed to the flu, or perhaps someone in Africa thinking it's malaria or something like that? So, I mean, I know you said so many important things right here, but let's go step by step, because, you know, we really want to understand what is going on with this Lyme disease. So if somebody has the flu-like symptom and they may have Lyme disease, how do they know that they are more likely to have Lyme disease as opposed to the flu? Do they have to know that they were bitten by a tick, or they have to go to the hospital, get a diagnosis, which of course it's so obvious, you have to see the doctor if you don't feel well. But from the get-go, when you're at home, how do you know you are most likely to have Lyme disease?
Well, first of all, we would look at where you live, because actually Lyme disease is found predominantly in 14 different states, you know, here in the United States, most of it kind of the Northeast, so places like New York, Connecticut, Maine, that kind of thing. There's also some Lyme disease that's found in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and then there's been some Lyme disease discovered in Northern California. So those are kind of the main places. So if you know you're in an area where that Lyme disease is endemic. Also, if you go out into the long grasses where they like to be, or the woods, or, you know, gardening, that kind of thing, where you would be in a location where the ticks can be, first of all, what you want to do is to do preventative measures as much as you can. And what I mean by that is, if you're going to go into those areas, what the recommendations are is that you want to wear long sleeves, long pants, tuck your pants into your socks, because the ticks like to crawl up. So if you don't tuck them in, they can crawl up into your leg. After you've been outdoors, you want to, and you're wearing light-colored clothing, so because the ticks are dark, so you potentially could see them. But what you can do is to use a lint roller and kind of roll it on your clothes to see if you can pick up any of those ticks. And then within 2 hours of being outdoors in you know, an area where it's, you know, you might be exposed to one of these ticks, you want to take a shower, and you also want to do a tick check. So it's helpful to have somebody else taking a look, too, because they like to hide in places where your skin kind of creases. So it could be like in your elbow area, behind your ears, behind the knee area, in the groin, those kinds of places. If you find one of these ticks, what the recommendation is that you take tweezers and you put it really close to the skin, right on the skin, grab the tick, and then just pull straight back. So sometimes we hear people saying, oh, you should burn them with a match, or you should twist them or whatever, but the experts say that you just put the tweezers against the skin, grab the tick, and then gently pull back, and they'll come off. Yeah. Then what you want to do is take the tick to your health care provider, or you can actually order a kit on the Internet. I found one on Amazon.com. And basically, it has, you know, the envelope and all the things that you need to put the tick in there, send it off so they can test the tick to see if it has Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. So that would be one thing to do. Now, there's a lot of people who don't find a tick or don't even know that they've gotten bitten by a tick, you know, that will develop Lyme disease. So in that instance, the most, you know, the thing that's really important, and that's why I'm out there talking about it, you know, particularly in these areas that are endemic, is that you have to be educated and have an awareness, and so you have to have what we call a high index of suspicion. So if you start getting flu-like symptoms, you might think, oh, you know, maybe this could be Lyme disease because I was out walking, you know, and high grasses or in the woods or, you know, in one of these states where it's endemic. And there's actually no blood test that you can use, particularly during the first 30 days when antibiotics are effective. So it ends up that you just have to be suspicious that this could be going on and go on antibiotics without any labs, you know, telling you for sure that's what you have. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, after about 30 days or so, when the antibiotics aren't going to be effective anymore, that's when a certain number of people can actually have a development of something in their immune system called a Lyme-specific antigen. So they can test for that, but that test actually isn't the greatest test either, because they'll find that people who have Lyme disease, it may be positive in only about 50 to 60% of those people. So it's not something that you can rely on as an indicator that you have Lyme disease, because there's all sorts of people that get Lyme disease where that Lyme-specific antigen isn't detectable. So this is the thing that makes, you know, there's a lot of things about this particular disease that makes it tricky and difficult,
Yes. So here in the United States, what is the prime season for Lyme disease?
So the tick season is kind of the peak of it, is May, June, and July. But what we're finding with the warmer temperatures we've been experiencing on the planet is that the tick season is now longer, and instead of the ticks being really isolated to the northeast, which is where they originated, the first Lyme disease was actually discovered in Lyme, Connecticut, which is why we call it Lyme disease. But since that time, the Lyme disease has actually been spreading to other areas, you know, too.
So you mean the change in climate, global warming, if I could say that, it's
yes.
Contributing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they think. You know, it's one of the responsible factors for these longer seasons and for it spreading to other areas as well.
Mm. Interesting. So then countries where, when you look at the global landscape, countries where they have had tropical areas, whether it's sub-Saharan Africa or the Caribbean. So these areas geographically, given the climate, are also susceptible to Lyme disease?
Yeah, so it is found in other areas of the world too. And so, again, if you're traveling, you know, that would definitely be a possibility, and you'd want to check into seeing if the area that you're going to would be a place that's endemic with Lyme disease or not. Now, another thing that you can do that's really effective in helping to lower your risk of developing Lyme disease or really minimizing the symptoms that you have from it is they found that people who have a very strong immune system, so in other words, they're really healthy, then generally speaking, if they get this, you know, bitten by the tick that has Lyme disease in it, they will only experience very mild symptoms with it, and they don't go on to get the chronic Lyme disease. So if you get that chronic Lyme, like I said, it's a very different situation where it's not due primarily to the bacteria where antibiotics work, but rather it's this multi-system inflammatory disease, and so the treatment for it, and there is treatment, so that's the good news with it, because a lot of people really suffer with this, is to really work with improving the strength of the immune system and decreasing inflammation. So there's the basic things that you want to do, as always, is a super healthy diet and lifestyle. I mean, eating junk foods and high in sugar, those are things that really suppress the immune system and make you unhealthy. Mm-hmm. So kind of following, the normal recommendations for the best kind of diet and lifestyle is something that's really going to help you. And then there's a number of nutritional supplements that have actually been found to be extremely helpful. And the one that has really the most helpful is it's actually a mushroom formula that is out of Japan. It's called AHCC. So AHCC is well known in Japan as the formula that's the most powerful in helping to support the immune system. They actually prescribe it in hospitals in Japan, particularly for cancer patients. But what they did was they did a pilot study where they took people that had these early Lyme disease symptoms, as well as the chronic Lyme disease, put them on AHCC for 8 weeks, Then they retested them afterwards and found that they had significant improvements in their symptoms for both early Lyme as well as the chronic Lyme.
Okay. And Dr. Hunter, we'll talk more about it. We just have to take a short break for the news. And when we come back, we'll expand more on that. Thank you so much. And now it's time for the news with Ruth Adisu.
Good evening. A new study in the United States finds that light drinkers have the lowest combined risk of developing cancer and dying prematurely, even when compared to people who did not drink at all. Scientists looked at 100,000 adults in their mid-50s to early 70s, and each had completed a survey about their alcohol consumption. They then tracked these people for 9 years and found that men who drank 3 or more drinks per day were 3 to 4 more times likely to develop esophagus or liver cancer. Other alcohol-related cancers were colorectal and breast cancer in women. These findings were published in the journal PLOS Medicine. According to the study, a drink is a single shot of liquor, 5 ounces of wine, or 12 ounces of beer. The World Bank estimates that Rwanda requires at least $27.3 million annually for the next 10 years to eradicate malnutrition in the country. In the organization's latest report on the country's economic update, they estimated that the investment ought to go into averting cases of stunting as well as anemia in women. According to the latest statistics of 2014-2015, malnutrition was about 38% down from 50% in 2005. The funds, according to the bank, ought to be channeled towards complementary feeding education, prophylactic zinc supplementation, and the public provision of complementary foods would be the most effective in preventing stunting. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Lenore, back to you.
Thank you, Ruth. And welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing Lyme disease with our guest, a natural health expert and award-winning author, Dr. Christine Horner, who is joining us from San Diego, California. And we will continue our discussion in a moment. But first, here is a report on tick diseases.
There are more than 900 species of ticks in the world, many of which carry serious diseases. But no one had thought to study their genetics until about 10 years ago. That's when Australian-born entomologist Catherine Hill, who now works for Purdue University, proposed the idea of genome mapping Ixodes scapularis, the deer tick that's infamous for carrying Lyme disease.
A good way to think about a genome sequencing project is to relate it to almost like a jigsaw puzzle. So you break everything up into little pieces of DNA and then you have to put them back together again.
With backing from the National Institutes of Health, Hill put together a tick research team of 93 scientists from 46 institutions around the world. Their findings are published in Nature Communications. Among other things, they identified a long list of genes that control the smell and taste receptors and discovered that ticks smell with their feet. They climb blades of grass and hold their feet out until they sense a host to hop onto. With that information, scientists can design sprays and repellents to disrupt the tick's abilities to find a host, or perhaps even to mate and propagate. The researchers also determined that about 20% of the creature's genes are unique to ticks, which could lead to highly focused pesticides.
If we target these particular molecules, we can make designer chemistries that are very specific to the tick or unique to the tick, so that we would be controlling only the tick and not affecting other organisms in the environment. And that means that we would be aiming to design more environmentally acceptable products for tick control.
Hill's colleague, virologist Richard Kuhn, sees the tick genome map as a gateway for the development of new drugs. Knowledge of the Ixodes scapularis genome will not only help scientists develop vaccines for Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and a form of encephalitis, it could also prevent future tick-related epidemics.
Ticks are going to be expanding in the future, and it's better to be prepared now to begin to understand how we might be able to control them now than when we have an outbreak of a new disease and everybody says, let's do something, and we will not be prepared. We're preparing ahead of time.
Reflecting on the last 10 years of research, Hill says that though her team has come to the end of genome mapping, they're really just at the beginning of advancing work into understanding the biology of ticks.
I don't think that we have appreciated the diversity of bacteria and viruses that ticks can transmit, and we're just at the very beginning of getting a better appreciation of that, and understanding that ability to transmit pathogens.
As sequencing software technology catches up, they hope to sequence many more tick species genomes at a much quicker pace. For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste in West Lafayette, Indiana.
And again, if you're just joining us, our guest expert today is Dr. Christine Horner, who is joining us from San Diego, California. Now, Dr. Horner, you heard this report, and one of the things that one of the researchers said is ticks will be expanding. That's very concerning, right?
Well, yeah, this is another reason why you really want to do everything that we know that can help to prevent it. So, like I said, I wrote a book actually called Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty, which is all the information in there is about what you need to do in order to experience extraordinary health and longevity. So that's kind of all the diet and lifestyle things that are so important. And then in addition to that, before the break, we were talking about certain supplements, nutritional supplements that you can take that have been shown to be beneficial in helping not only to prevent the illness, but if you do get the chronic Lyme disease, these are things that can help to improve your symptoms.
Very interesting. And let's talk about, I wanted to talk about nutrition further, but when we talk about ticks, there are so many different types of ticks, as we heard in the report. Now, the tick that causes Lyme disease, is it something that you can find with dogs? Because dogs have ticks too. Is it a different type of ticks?
No, it's the same. So you have to be careful too if you're in those states, the 14 states where Lyme disease, like 96% of all Lyme disease is located, so like Maryland, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, those areas. So if you're in that area, you do have to be careful about your animals too, because if they're outdoors, they can definitely get the ticks on them.
Okay. Now let's talk about nutrition. Because Lyme disease bacteria attacks the healthy cells and weakens the body's natural defenses. So can you tell us in terms of better nutrition? I know you touched on it earlier, but I wanted us to expand a little bit more on better nutrition, also perhaps some supplements and some of the nutrients that are very important in terms of building our immune system and staying healthy.
The traditional American diet and lifestyle, which is based on burgers and fries, that is not going to make you healthy.
All right.
So you really want to favor, I always just say very simply, you want to favor organically grown plants. So things like, vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds, these are things that are really the recipe for having a very strong body that it's just packed full of all sorts of nutrients and kind of natural plant chemicals that help to keep us healthy. And then in addition to that, as we mentioned, there are some nutritional supplements that have been found to be quite beneficial. And before the break, we talked about the mushroom formula AHCC from Japan with research that's actually been done on Lyme disease patients showing that it helped to significantly improve the symptoms in the early phase as well as the later phase of chronic Lyme. And they had three people with that Lyme-specific antigen that tested positive at the beginning of the study and went negative at the end of the study. So that's one thing that can be very beneficial. I've taken it every day probably for 5 years or more once I discovered it, because it's just an incredible immune-supporting supplement, which helps with your overall health. Vitamin D3 is another nutrient that we hear a lot about, because they've just really done an explosion of research in the last several decades and found that vitamin D3 is critical to our health more than anything they ever realized. And it turns out it acts like a hormone in our bodies, and it's essential for the proper functioning of every cell. And if it's low, which the estimates are low, or that it's low in 80% of people in the United States, it significantly increases your risk of many different kinds of diseases, from neurological diseases such as Parkinson's and multiple multiple sclerosis to certain cancers to diabetes. I mean, you can just go on and on. And so vitamin D3 is also very important for a healthy immune system. And so it's really important to get your levels checked. Otherwise, you have absolutely no idea what your levels are. So you can either go to a doctor's office for that, or you can actually order kits online. There's a website called nutrientpower.org, and you can order a kit from there that comes to your house. And basically, it has instructions in there, but basically what you're doing is pricking your finger, putting a little dot of blood on a piece of paper, sending it in, and they can tell you what your levels are. And what we've discovered is that most people need way more vitamin D every day than we ever suspected. 2,000 international units is considered kind of the minimum dose that you want to take. And because everybody metabolizes vitamin D differently and so forth, it's really some people will need way more, like 5,000 international units a day, or even more. So super important to get those levels checked, and then they recommend that you recheck them about every 6 months so that you can stay on top of it.
And where can you how can you get vitamin D3 naturally in food?
So it is found naturally in certain foods, such as mushrooms.
Okay.
But really, the experts say you've got to take extra I mean, virtually everybody has to take extra vitamin D. Now, certain people that are living in, like, sunny San Diego, like myself, getting lots of sunshine, you know, we manufacture it in our skin. But there's, again, so many different mitigating factors to that. In the wintertime, obviously, most people are covered up. So the experts say everybody should be taking a supplement, and it's a minimum of 2,000 international units a day and possibly more, you know, depending on what your levels are.
Okay. And then other nutrients, omega-3, I believe?
Yes, exactly. So omega-3, kind of similarly, this is another nutrient that we've now realized is it's considered the healthiest type of fat that we can consume. We realize that most people are low in it, and that for optimum health, you want to have your levels high in it. And once again, experts are saying it's virtually impossible to get enough from your diet. So you need to take an omega-3 fatty acid supplement every day. Like vitamin D, you can test your levels to see what they are to make sure you're getting enough. And that same website I told you about, the nutrientpower.org, they actually have a kit that includes vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids, you know, where you can test your levels with it. But again, it's hugely important. And one of the things they found is that it's incredibly anti-inflammatory, and the inflammation in chronic Lyme is the main issue, and it really works to help support your brain and your cognitive function. So if you definitely have, you know, issues with Lyme disease where you've got neurological symptoms with it, you want to make sure that you're taking adequate amounts of omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay, and in food, where do you find it? I always like to talk about the option of food.
Sure, yeah. So omega-3s are found in a variety of different foods. Flax seeds, they're really high in that. Walnuts. But again, you'd have to eat massive amounts in order to get enough. And then cold water fish, like wild-caught salmon, is high in omega-3s. Yeah.
Okay. And finally, just before we end, quickly, what is your advice for people who are really concerned about Lyme disease?
Well, like I said, the things that you want to do is to, first of all, make sure that if you're going out, you want to wear the protective clothing. You can also spray yourself with essential oils. They found it's more effective than DEET, you know, the bug repellents.
Okay.
And so things like lemon of eucalyptus, rosemary, there's a number. Then you can make your own spray, but spray your skin as well as your clothing.
All right.
And then, you know, if you get bit, send the tick off to see if it's got Lyme disease, and then, like the nutrients I talked about, can be extremely beneficial. Yeah.
Dr. Christine Horner, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome.
And that's all the time we have for today. We thank our guest, award-winning author and a natural health expert, Dr. Christine Horner. And for more on today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. I am Lenore Moudou, your host in Washington, D.C., with producer Fatou Kalala, Ruth Adisu, with the news and engineer Sidrak. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
stay tuned for Africa.